This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for being with us for Friday Politics on not only WRKF in Baton Rouge, but WWNO in New Orleans. Robin Dow is producing. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services, and your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. We start with Jay Darden, the Commissioner of Administration now for 7.5 years under Governor John Bel Edwards. He was in the race for governor in 2015, ran a strong campaign, but did not win and ultimately endorsed Edwards over David Vitter. John Bel Edwards got 56% of the votes, and Jay Darden has been his top guy since then. And we are 21 weeks away from another election for governor. And Jay Darden, before we get to the budget and all those good things, I'm sure people are noting some similarities between 2015 and 2023.
I think there are some. More candidates in the race this time and well-known people throughout the state, but it's going to be a very interesting race.
And later this hour, we will visit with one of the candidates who is trying hard. He has a sizable war chest, and he's running as an independent, which is a bit of a novelty, and we'll find out how that plays in Louisiana. But Hunter Lundy will be in the House. But there is the business of government being done at the Capitol. The session must end by law on June 8th, and the budget, even though the state has more money than it has ever before, is in flux because of a philosophy that is being imposed by the conservative majority, and particularly in the Louisiana House. And Jay Darden's quoted in The Advocate a few days ago as saying that this plan to pay off debt is like paying down a mortgage on a house before repairing holes in the roof. Where is this going?
Well, we don't know exactly where it's going yet, but I think at the end of the day, particularly based upon REC recognizing additional revenue earlier in the week, that you're going to have a resolution that I think will wind up doing some of the things the governor's been advocating doing, early childhood education, teacher pay raise, more support to make up for the losses at higher education sustained over the past decade. And I think at the end of the day, that's what's going to wind up happening.
Now, I noted a few days ago that the budget's about $42 billion, a little more than that, but between 42 and 43 billion. 20 years ago, it was 25 billion. Now, that's not all state money. A lot of that is federal money, and we have had inflation and that sort of thing. So, is it really out of whack that we're up 17 billion in 20 years?
No, I don't think it is. I think it's consistent with what you'd probably see across the country on just in the private sector as well as in the governmental sector. It's shocking to see those kind of numbers, though, and it's certainly shocking to see where we are right now in Louisiana, given where we've been in the past. We've never had the kind of largesse that we have right now in one-time money and successive years of budget surpluses that put us in a position where we can make the kind of investments in Louisiana's future, particularly in the education arena, that we have not been able to make in the past. And that's really the motivation behind what the governor's been suggesting about how we ought to use this money.
And when you took office, you and the governor, the budget was in a mess. And part of that was related to the decision to get rid of the Stelly plan. You were a proponent, and in fact, you were out there as one of the leaders on that. That didn't work out so well because Bobby Jindal made cut after cut after cut. But things are better now. How much better are they?
About $3 billion better if you look at where we are right now based upon what the REC did. We basically have one-time money from a surplus last year. We have over $1 billion in money this year that had not been expected based on the previous revenue forecast. And we have a huge growth factor in next year's budget, which the REC recognized based on the fact that the economy is ginning better than people expected. And we've budgeted conservatively, frankly. And so we've got this opportunity to take this one-time money and invest it. We've never spent a nickel of one-time money on recurring expenses. That's what got us in trouble during the Jindal days. But it's okay if you take recurring money and spend it on one-time purposes because you're not growing the budget and you're investing in one-time things that really need investment.
877-217-5757, your number for Friday Politics on WRKF and WWNO in New Orleans, standing proud at 89.9 on the dial, and we're pleased to be with this fine audience every Friday now. And Jay Darden is a guy who knows his way around Louisiana. He's now an award-winning documentarian You've gotten a lot of response from the presentation on Louisiana Public Broadcasting. That was the catalyst for your last appearance, and I think you're probably amazed at the kind of response you received.
Well, it's been great. I hardly a day goes by that somebody doesn't mention that they've seen the show and really enjoyed it, and it's hopefully going to be a great effort for LPB. It's going to run again in June, and of course, there's a coffee table book that accompanies it. As I make a shameless plug for that, all the proceeds from the sale goes to LPB, the Friends of LPB. So it was a fun undertaking to do that documentary.
And Jay Darden loves the state of Louisiana. I remember a few years ago, you selected like the 150 most prominent Louisiana citizens, didn't you?
Well, the 200.
It was 200th anniversary. Yeah.
And that was fun too. And I kind of supplemented that list because there were a couple of people I really should have put on there, and so I had an extra 5 people, I think, at the end of the day.
Well, you could add each year.
That's right.
Yeah. And who was number one? Did you rank them?
I didn't rank them. No, I didn't rank them. That was too tough of a task.
Yeah. Well, some would say Huey Long would be number one. I think and you have noted that despite the enormous impact he had on Louisiana, and in particular LSU, as Bob Mann's book Kingfish U notes, but he was on the stage for 7 years. That was it.
It's amazing. And you're right. If I had to rank him, he would be number one just because of the profound impact he had that has sustained itself these decades after his death. I mean, populist politics has remained and become a national issue, and he was really at the forefront of taking that message to Washington.
Well, Jay Darden, I remember in 1987, lost the race for the Louisiana Senate to Larry Bankston by how many votes?
200 some odd. I don't remember the exact
number. It was close. I thought it was actually under 200.
It was close.
But it was a tight one. He goes to the Metro Council, then goes to the State Senate, and ultimately is elected Secretary of State and Lieutenant Governor, and now is Commissioner of Administration. Is there a next move for you?
Well, it won't be an elected office. I'll keep doing something. Not sure exactly what it'll be, but I won't be running for office anymore.
Would you be open to remaining as Commissioner of Administration?
Well, I don't know. I'm not even going to speculate about that. A new governor obviously is going to select the people he wants to be part of their leadership group, and I'm not looking to stay on in state government, frankly. I had planned my retirement after the governor's race and had to kind of reverse that once John Bell asked me to do what I'm doing now.
And as you know, these cabinet positions, even when people like each other, they rarely last 2 terms. And for most of Governor Edwards' tenure, the people have stayed. A few have left of late, and this is the top job. It's not one that does not have some tense moments, but you have stayed, and I am surmising that it's because you've enjoyed the job and working with this administration.
That's correct. I have enjoyed it, and it's been an interesting and challenging and fun ride, really, to take Louisiana where it was 8 years ago with a $2 billion deficit to where we are right now, talking about the largest one-time money that the state has ever seen.
Now, you were elected to the Louisiana Senate, what, 91?
91.
91. You came in same year as David Bruce Vitter did in the House. And how many Republicans were there in the Louisiana legislature then?
There were a handful. I want to say that when I was elected, there were 9 Republicans in the Senate. I don't remember the total number, but that was at the outset of the growth of the Republican Party, really. And obviously, it's grown incrementally since then and dramatically since then.
But Edwin Edwards was coming in for his final term as governor. He locked horns with him a time or two, didn't you?
I did. I was, and that's what I've told a lot of the Republicans in the legislature. I understand what they've been doing here for the past 8 years. I was throwing those hand grenades the first term in the legislature, and then things changed when Mike Foster got elected. And that's what happens in a legislative setting. There's going to be a shift in power, and there are going to be different philosophies and discussions about what's in the best interest of the state. And that going back to where we are right now, that's why this is such an important time, because we have an unprecedented opportunity to make investments in things that people have been talking about for decades.
What do you think the biggest issue in the state is right now, long term?
Education. I think it's a recognition that we've got to get ahead of the curve and not playing catch up all the time in education. We're behind the curve in what we've done for early childhood education. We lag behind our fellow southern states and what we pay our teachers, which is a profession that doesn't have the interest that it's had in the past, and that's something we ought to all be concerned about. We need bright young people entering the teaching profession and then taking it to the next level. What we've done in the community and technical college system has been significant, And the commitment that we make to that system as well as to all of higher ed is critical, because higher education is an economic driver. And we have some great institutions in Louisiana that have been challenged over the course of the past decade and have a lot of catching up to do, but a lot of potential and room to grow.
And a listener notes, when I was mentioning your expansive resume, I did not mention you were also student body president at LSU back in...
You like to mention that whenever I'm on the show. Yes, I was.
So, and Jay Darden loves his university and was mentioned strongly as a candidate for president. That didn't happen. Was that a disappointment?
Well, I wouldn't say it was a disappointment. I entered that believing that it was something I ought to be trying to do for the university. Other candidates came onto the scene, and you know, I've always believed things have a way of working out, whether it be the governor's race or that, and I've been very fortunate to do what I've done.
We're back after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org and podcasts available 24 hours a day at wrkf.org and at talklouisiana.org. Jay Darden is with us for another segment, the Commissioner of Administration. He counts the beans at the state capitol, and it's been largely a good 8 years with the money that has been available, in part because of an adjustment in philosophy, and also the state has benefited to some extent, as have other states, through money from the federal government related to COVID. But there is a collision at a possibility of one at the state capitol, as there is nationally, regarding debt limits. And what do you make of this? Is this something that is serious, or is it just a blip on the radar?
Well, the debt limit debate at Washington is certainly serious, because that affects the entire economy of the world. And they can print money in Washington, and that's why this debt limit issue becomes such a keen issue. In Louisiana, we can't do that. We have to have a balanced budget every year. And the issue that we're facing this year, for the first time, really, it's become a controversy, is the expenditure limit, the fact that we have a limit on what the legislature can spend that can be exceeded with a two-thirds vote of the legislature. And the Senate, obviously, the Senate president has been very clear about his desire to make that happen. The House didn't want to do that, and they passed a budget that sought to get around having to confront that issue. But it'll be a confrontation here in the last couple of weeks of the session, because I have every belief that the Senate will vote to exceed the limit, will send a budget back to the House that exceeds the limit, and that'll force a vote on that issue in the House.
William in Brule. Good morning, William. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Oh, thank you. Good morning. I hear a lot about teacher pay raises. I teach part-time as an adjunct in the system, and we're getting half pay. There have been some teacher raises, pay raises in higher education for the last 10 years. We have not got anything. I think we had a $250 pay raise per class. We get $2,500 per class, and that's half of the rate of a full-time teacher. We're 70% of the teaching force out there in courses. And when are you going to bring up so-called adjunct teacher pay to par? Thank you.
Well, it hadn't really been raised as an issue, frankly, until you've introduced it to me. I've not heard any discussion about the compensation for adjunct teachers and what they may get. It's an interesting notion, but I haven't ever heard any discussion about it. We're advocating at least a $2,000 pay raise for teachers, a $1,000 raise for support workers, and we're hopeful, based upon what REC did yesterday, that the legislature will consider a $3,000 raise for teachers. I mean, this is an important issue, and Louisiana's behind the curve, as I mentioned earlier, and this is our opportunity to be able to change that, and I'm hopeful that's what the legislature will do at the end of the day.
Do you think they will?
I do.
Now, Governor Edwards, a few days ago on his show, asked the governor once a month. He's done it now for 86 straight months. He lamented the overall philosophy of the legislature, and this was in response to a question about the so-called Don't Say Gay bill, and here's how the governor responded.
You know, I really wish that our legislature would focus on things that grow the economy, get people employed, fix our infrastructure, address our critical needs, you know, homeowners insurance and other things. And rather than doing that, sometimes they just feel obligated to introduce bills into the legislature here that follow some sort of a national playbook. I don't believe we have any issues of the type that are at issue in that bill that need to be addressed here in Louisiana. It's just
all right. Your thoughts about his concern?
Well, John Bell and I are both creatures of the legislature. We both cut our teeth mm-hmm. being legislators, and you understand that in a legislative session or legislative setting, you're going to have people who are going to bring bills that are responsive to what their constituents are telling them they want, and that are going to track what's happening at a national level. And I think I too kind of express concern about the way in which those issues seem to take front and center stage and become hot button issues and create divisions that are reflected as other bills are considered. So we have a lot of priorities in Louisiana that need to be addressed. Most of them center around the way we've invested or failed to invest in Louisiana's priorities. And that's where I think the real focus ought to be.
Now, you saw this chapter before in which the state had money, and at that time it was related to Katrina infusion from the federal government. And then not only did that money go away, but Stelly went away, and King Alexander, when he was president of LSU, said he had to make 13 budget cuts. Do we have the capacity to do this all over again if we're not prudent?
Well, yes, hopefully we wouldn't repeat those errors of the past again, but that's why I talk about the potential for investment right now. The money that we have right now is designed to make up in many respects for the shortages that were visited upon higher education and education in general over the past decade. And that's why it's so important that we do it now, because we have this money and we're not going to be growing the budget on a recurring basis dramatically. We will be growing it to give teacher pay raises, to give recurring expenses for higher education, but we ought to take advantage of this opportunity to spend money and do it on one-time purposes, making the kind of investments in our infrastructure and long-term needs, deferred maintenance that are so desperately needed. And that's why we favor doing that instead of the advance payment on the initial IUAL, mm-hmm. which is going to be paid in full by 2029 anyway.
Here's an observation from Hal and Monroe at talkatalklouisiana.org about politics. And Jay is a student of Louisiana politics like few other people. But as you know, Jay, and Hal writes, the governor's race in Louisiana is set up for a member of Congress to run and keep their job if they lose. And we've seen this in 87 when you ran for the Senate. We had Romer and Livingston and Tozan running. Is it a surprise that no member of Congress teed it up this time, considering that we've had Romer, Treen, Edwards, and Jindal all elected from the U.S. House?
A good observation and a good question. And I think you see the influence that our congressmen have at a national level, and I think that's one of the reasons why you don't see that happening. For example, Steve Scalise, Garrett Graves, both in positions of significant leadership in the House, they would be two people who would have been looked at as potential gubernatorial candidates but decided to stay where they are because they're in a position to truly help Louisiana, and they've risen to leadership positions. It's something I mentioned mm-hmm. earlier about Louisiana's disproportionate impact on so many areas of life, and this is what the show on LPB is all about. And you look mm-hmm. at the history of Louisiana's elected officials in Congress, we're pretty good at politics, and we managed to get to leadership positions, and you see that with Garrett and Steve in particular. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one of the things that discouraged those two from entering the governor's race. But it's a good observation. That has been a jumping off point to get to be governor in recent past. It won't be in this cycle, although Jeff Landry had been there before.
Now, here's one from Holly in the Garden District in Baton Rouge asking, does it trouble you to be viewed by some as a turncoat for going to work for a Democratic governor?
No, it doesn't. If it had bothered me, I guess I wouldn't have done it. It never bothered me at the outset, and it doesn't bother me 8 years later. I know there are people who feel like, well, you left us, you know, you abandoned the Republican Party and helped this Democrat. Well, I felt like I was helping the state of Louisiana and that this Democrat was going to do good things for Louisiana, and he has. So I have no regrets whatsoever about that. Right. And as we've talked about before, Jim, the Republican Party has never been 100% behind me in races that I ran anyway. I ran against and beat the chairman of the party, the former chairman of the party, and the son of a former chairman of the party. So I've never been the darling of the party.
All right, Rick in New Orleans, please be concise. We're headed to a break, Rick, but you have the floor.
Yes, I was wondering. I'm a retired truck driver for a number of years, all 48 states and a little of Canada. When are they going to fix it where they get that passenger rail going?
Well, that's a very hot topic right now. There is funding in place to make that happen between Baton Rouge and New Orleans as an extension of what's already in place from New Orleans to Mobile. There's also funding in place for an additional run in North Louisiana across I-20. It'll connect ultimately Texas and Atlanta. So there's a lot going on in that area. We're hopeful that that's going to become a reality sooner rather than later.
We'll be back to wrap it up with Commissioner Jay Darden after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. 21 weeks from the governor's election, 148 days. It's getting closer to October 14th, and one of the candidates, and I would say a major candidate, Hunter Lundy's in the House. He's on deck, and we're finishing up with Jay Darden. And for those of you who called at the finish line, Jay's always been very charitable with us as far as coming on. I'm sure he'll be back soon, but Robin says we could take a couple of calls, but you got to be concise. Craig in Natchitoches. Craig, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Yeah, a couple of things, Commissioner Darden. One, were you surprised that Billy Nungesser didn't run for governor? And two, what was your thought about the Republican Party coming out and endorsing Jeff Landry right out of the gate?
I wasn't surprised. Billy's got the best job in the world. I had it as before, and I think he made a wise move staying where he was. And so that didn't completely surprise me. I absolutely think the Republican Party was foolish in doing what they did and making an endorsement before they had an opportunity to know who all was running, and to do it in a way that didn't appear that they were open to considering any other candidate. So that didn't, frankly, unfortunately, it didn't surprise me. But, yes, it was disappointing to see that happen.
Okay, and final caller for Jay Darden, Q in Baton Rouge on Airline Highway. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. I just wanted to ask, why do you think our legislature here in Louisiana usually pulls funds from health care and education and other things like that? Who is that benefiting, and why do you think they do that? Thank you.
Well, in times of budget stress, the only things that are eligible to be cut that aren't constitutionally protected are higher education and health care. So that's where cuts have to be made when they're necessary. The good news is those cuts are not necessary now. We've gotten past that, and we've had budget surpluses the past 6 years. We've not been in the cutting business like we were in the first 2 years of this administration. So hopefully those days are behind us, and hopefully the future of the state is going to avoid having to make those kind of mid-year cuts.
Well, thank you, Jay Darden. Always an honor and pleasure.
Thanks, Jim.
Appreciate you. And in studio is Hunter Lundy, prominent attorney and bunch of longtime politico in Louisiana. He's run for office before, and he almost beat Chris John back in the day as a candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives. And this guy's done well in life and has decided he wants the biggest job in state government. Probably will have to take a pay cut if he wins, but why are you running for governor?
My call has always been to help people, and my desire has not changed. So I just simply said I'm leaving the courthouse and going to the Capitol. I'm going to do it in a bigger position, and I feel that I have the ability and the wisdom now with age and desire. And of course, people know that my heart's in it. I'm in it for the people, and I want to see Louisiana prosper. Not that it's not prospering now, but I want to really. And I listened to your conversation with Jay Darden recently. In the last few minutes, and I'm all about education, and that we have an opportunity to make a difference now, and so starting with our children, starting with 3-year-olds. So I mean, I'm proud of the legislature in the sense that they've invested money in recent years, and the governor has made an effort to do that. And I know Donna's a school teacher, but my mother was a kindergarten teacher.
Yeah.
Sister is a kindergarten teacher. My mother was a college teacher for childhood education. So I understand the value of doing that, reaching them young, And so I have a heart for my grandchildren now. It's not my children. It's my grandchildren. I still love my children. They're doing a great job as parents. But that's what the future is, and we've got to make a big effort, and I'm making a big effort to do that.
Well, you're running as an independent, and that is perhaps the wave of the future, but is it the wave of the present? Can you get any traction as an independent?
Well, today, yes, and I have gotten traction. And I, you know, there's 860,000 registered voters as independents and no parties in Louisiana, no party. And so 10 years ago, that wasn't the case. And the fastest growing movement is in the independent, both statewide and nationwide. And so, yes, I tell people one vote more than the third place finisher and I'll be the governor and in the primary. And I never was involved in party politics. One time I was coached into doing something that, you know, I would not have done again. But, you know, I ran as what I was registered to run 27 years ago as a Democrat. And of course, Chris and I both were Democrats in the runoff. But again, it was never about the party. It was about people today, more so than ever. And I heard you talk about Huey Long as a populist candidate years ago. I mean, I guess I'm a populist candidate. I'm the people. I'm the people are my party, and that's all. And if God allows me to be the governor, I'll be the best that Louisiana's had. And because of my work ethic and because of my desire to help and because I want to see a transformation in education, and I do want to see our roads fixed because they're terrible. So anyway, that's kind of who I am and why I'm doing what I'm doing.
The man from Lake Charles who knows his way down I-10, and it is curious that Southwest Louisiana has many of the major players in this race, with both Sean Wilson and Jeff Landry being from Acadiana, and you're from Lake Charles, which produced Richard IU, Buddy Leach. You knew them well, didn't you?
I did, and got to visit and talk to Richard back in January and have a meal with him, and did not realize he was ill, and so we lost a great public servant in the last few months when we lost Richard Ayoub. And Buddy Leach, you know, he was a great public servant, and he had the biggest giving heart of a man that people really don't realize who he was and what he did. I did, because, I mean, I frequently saw him, and we frequently visited and prayed together right up until he died this past year.
877-217-5757 is your number. And talk at talklouisiana.org for Friday Politics on WWNO and WRKF. And a listener in New Orleans, not surprisingly, asks about your association with one Marvin Gorman. You wrote a book about it called Let Us Pray, and that's P-R-E-Y. You were in the middle of the brouhaha between Gorman and Jimmy Swaggart.
That's correct. In the late 1980s, Brother Gorman was buying a television station in Lake Charles, and I met him. Our state house member at the time was Randy Roach, who went on to be the mayor. Very good man. Was a good mayor. Called me and said, listen, there's a gentleman trying to buy this TV station out of receivership, and would you represent him? And so I met Marvin Gorman that time. And then I had started working for Sam Jones's old law firm, the last governor from Southwest Louisiana, and I was young. And then he was unable to close on the loan because there was a brouhaha over what had transpired years ago, and he resigned his church. And then there went on a letter writing contest by a group of people who ultimately became defendants in the lawsuit. And so I told him that I would if he ever wanted somebody, and I saw the letters, if they ever wanted counsel, I would consider it. Well, meanwhile, months down the road, in December of 1986, I formed my own law firm. I started the law firm 36 years ago, and I got a call from a lawyer from Tulsa, Oklahoma, who was a famous civil rights lawyer, and said that Marvin Gorman had hired him. He wanted me to be his local counsel. Mm-hmm. So I said, sure. I got involved in filing that lawsuit in New Orleans. Tommy D. Frazier ended up having a massive heart attack, and I became the lead counsel in a trial as a very young lawyer. And so, this, as the story goes, we were successful, And all Brother Gorman wanted to do was clear his name. And there was exaggeration and lies told. And so, yes, and after that, it was recommended that I needed to record. It was a history event. Record it. And so I did. And, you know, I developed three characters in the book. And I think people enjoy the book. It's, you know, I don't know that I would write it again. I don't mean anything, but, you know, even the truth hurts people.
Right.
So
well,
anyway.
Well, Gorman, and I know you want to talk about your campaign, but he is a fascinating fellow, I think now deceased, but he was the guy who caught Jimmy Swaggart literally with his pants down outside the Travel Inn on Airline Highway in October of 1987.
That's correct. He was a divine appointment in my life because it wasn't too many years later. You know, I tell people he was first my client, then he was my friend, then he became a spiritual mentor to me. You know, he led me to back to where I needed to be with the Lord, and I had relationships all over the country because of that man. I ended up going to Kenya and Swaziland, Africa, mission work.
How much does your faith guide you politically? Because you are on social issues, conservative. I think you would embrace that. But on fiscal issues, you're probably a traditional Democratic type guy. What is it about your conversion, if you will, that caused you to have a philosophy that is one that may be appealing to some, but you don't really have a home as far as either party?
Well, you know, I was listening to your interview with Jay Darden, and he and I are pretty much on the same page. And especially in fiscal, I mean, I support what Senator Cortez and the governor want to do on lifting the cap because we need to fix our roads. We need to pay our teachers. Our teachers, we need to incentivize them because right now we're 2,500 teachers short in Louisiana. So I care about people. I care about teachers. We need to let our children get out for recess. And so our children are being deprived. COVID had some adverse effects by masking our children. Not that, you know, it wasn't needed in certain scenarios, but our children pose no risk. And so today we have a setback a little. And so we need to take advantage of this money for education. And we need to let our children get developed. They need to go outside and play. And we need mandatory recess. 2018, you know, you had a Republican legislature and you had the Teachers Federation all agreeing on a recess, and yet we couldn't get it through. So there's some things, technology is great, but there's some things that it's done to hurt our children.
877-217-5757 is your number back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And Hunter Lundy is in the house, and he is an exotic candidate. And I would say that most of the Republicans running are pretty much boilerplate, and the Democrat who's running is pretty much boilerplate as far as their party's positions on issues. But this guy, you got to talk to him to find out where he stands, and some people find that appealing, that he's not dipping into any playbook to decide which position he's on and which team he's for or against. But Hunter Lundy has an uphill battle, but he does have some personal wealth, and he has had some contributions, so he has a war chest, and he has one of the best political consultants in the business, George Kennedy, the brother of the junior U.S. senator. He was Jay Darden's political consultant through all of Jay's races. He does very good television, and you talk about a guy who is a force of nature. Yeah. You're keeping some late hours if George is your political consultant, aren't you?
I am, and, you know, I do have a work ethic that my father put in me, and so we have been out long in advance of the other candidates, and, you know, people like to say, well, money can't buy you love, but it can buy you political races. Well, this is one that money will not buy, this political race. I've learned in the last 15 months that people in Louisiana are thinking independently. And they want independently, young people especially. And so I think we're going to make history. I think we're going to crawl right into this thing, and we're moving. We got legs around the state, and that we make this runoff, we'll win the governor's office. Yes, it's hard because you don't have, you know, the parties, you know, but I'm not into party politics and I'm kind of sick of them. And I listened to Jay Darden talk about how this adversity from Washington migrated to Louisiana. And I'm not a grenade thrower. I said, you know, I don't come looking for a fight. Now I know how to fight. Don't get me wrong. I'm a consensus builder. And you know, some things we can't compromise on, but we can grow this state. And if people haven't seen Jay Darden's documentary, they need to watch it, because that really tells the history of what Louisiana is all about. And I'm the candidate for all the people.
877-217-5757 and talkatalklouisiana.org to reach Hunter Lundy in the home stretch. Friday politics on Talk Louisiana. Patricia in Magnolia Woods in Baton Rouge. Hi, Patricia. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Louisiana has the second highest maternal death rate in the nation and also the second highest rate of infant mortality. And I was wondering what, as governor, you would do to help save those lives. Thanks.
Well, we have to make sure that our health care is best served to the infant mortality and to maternal care. We've got to make sure they have the best health care. And right now, I think we have good health care. I can't explain why the statistics are what they are as to what you just pointed out, Patricia. But, I mean, that's something that we've got to be concerned about. And so the health care, I mean, I have two daughter-in-laws and a daughter. And I have a pregnant daughter-in-law right now. She's got two sons, and she's got she lost one, my son, and she lost one last summer, and they're going to have another one this summer. And then I have three other grandchildren. So believe me, this is about our children, and we want them to be healthy, and we want to have a healthy state. We know that we have some childhood issues that I think will help be cured by mandatory recess at school. We need our kids to have health. We need them to learn civilization. They need to learn teamwork. We need to let kids play. And so we've let technology overcome some of that. That can build the health of our children. And as far as the health care of our mothers, I mean, I think if you get a chance to hear my radio commercial, you're going to talk about a farm. You're going to hear me talk about farm fresh food. You're going to hear me talking about healthy eating, healthy planning, healthy exercising. We can do that. I mean, we haven't had real mandatory education since President John Kennedy was in office in the 60s. And so we have got to do some things to better the health of our state, which will impact mothers, will impact infants. If the mothers are healthy, generally the infants are healthy. And so those are some of my thoughts on a question that I really didn't anticipate, but you're right on target. Is what we need to do.
Patricia. Dane Sherman in Ponchatoula. Professor Sherman says, can Hunter Lundy talk about how important it is for bringing college classes to every prison in Louisiana and speak about this as a way to move Louisiana forward?
Yes. Literacy and incarceration are tied together. We know that if we can have a literate society, that we reduce incarceration. We know that when if a prisoner gets out of Angola and he has a college degree, recidivism goes down to 9%. If it's if he has a 2-year degree, it goes down to 14%. If he's learned a trade, then he can plug right in, because we know that to way to transform poverty in the state of Louisiana, and I have a vision and a plan that we're going to take ourselves off the top of the list of poverty. And we can do that through private and government cooperation and enterprise cooperation. And then we can do it with our trade schools. So I know that I toured Angola 3 weeks ago, and I went all over that facility. I know that there's plenty ample area to grow more vegetables. I know that we can train more animals. I mean, I'm the one candidate that says we can take a Belgian Malinois dog and have him trained, and we can protect our kids at schools. They're the most sophisticated animal in the world, and we're all so busy trying to create screening devices and things like that. Nobody's given it thought. I've given it some thought. So that can be done at in Angola, the training and the teaching of these animals, the growing of farm fresh food. We already feed all the other prisoners from Angola, but we could feed school children through Angola. We can reduce incarceration. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Beverly and Metairie asks about whether you would continue to take the Medicaid money that was earmarked for the state under the Affordable Care Act. Will you accept that money?
Yes. I've said already that we've got hundreds of thousands of people in Louisiana, that a large percent of our population that are dependent on that Medicaid money after the expansion, that until we create a method to change that, that we have to continue the expansion. We got to find the money to do it, to take care of the health of our citizens. And once again, I go back to poverty. When we can rectify poverty in this state, we can change the mean income in this state that will give people an opportunity to get off of government subsidies.
All right. What about, you're a coastal guy, you grew up in Lake Charles. What about the existential threat we face as far as our coast washing away?
We got the coastal protection programs, they have good programs. We've got a long-term plan. A lot of that plan has to do with the monies that's necessary to build the barriers. As recently as Ida, we saw some of the effectiveness of those barriers in certain parishes where they didn't have the flood claims that they had in before because the surge didn't come over the wall. We saw the success of some of those money spent in Southwest Louisiana after Loran Delta because it didn't destroy the highway running east and west down that runs through Cameron and Vermilion Parish. So it's working. We just got to keep doing it.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Hunter Lundy.
Good morning. Mr. Lundy, there was an article in the New York Times yesterday. The earth is expected to rise, the temperature rise, for many years to come in the future. Louisiana is suffering from extremely high casualty and flood insurance rates. And if you had an audience with the Republican representatives in Washington from Louisiana who are willing to shut down the government, deprive people of their Social Security checks, and decimate people's portfolios because they want to repeal President Biden's green energy program.
What would you say if you're in tune with what David is stating? Hunter Lundy.
Well, I'm not going to agree with him. I said, you know, we're not going to shut down Social Security or the other programs we have. You know, I don't agree with all of the green program, but I know that there's progress that can be made through the use of that revenue, and it can be made in the state of Louisiana. We need to grab a hold of that. We need to look at the use of hydrogen and the use of, blue ammonia. We need to look at the things that we're doing today in this state.
All right.
And so I hope that answers your question.
All right.
I'm not going to shut it down.
Okay. Tracy at the Capitol in Baton Rouge asked if you were in favor of the bill that passed committee the other day for the expansion of the concealed carry opportunities in Louisiana. Would you?
Yes. I've made it clear I'm a strict constitutionalist. So I believe in the First, the Second. I believe in all the amendments in the Constitution. And so I don't have a problem with the constitutional carry.
Well, yeah, obviously the governor is, the current governor is not in the same camp on that issue as you. But the state of Louisiana, as I've noted, went 400,000 votes for Donald Trump. Yet John Bel Edwards won the governor's election by 40,000. We're short on time, but 800,000 more people voted in the presidential election than in the governor's election in the last cycle. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I think that you're never going to agree with in everything that a politician does. And I think there were some decisions that were made that that troubled people. I mean, look how successful the larger vote that Rasponi got in the 2019 race. And Trump was down here every chance he got.
Well, thank you, Hunter Lundy. We'll hopefully talk with you again. And signature support for Talk Louisiana is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Stay safe and stay tuned.